Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your long awaited edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, sponsored by Stardust Spirits. Use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk to get 20% off all their excellent award-winning clobber, drinks, products, whatever you want to call it. I'm Mark Heath. I'm joined today by Stewie and Alex. Ross is still moving house. Also has some technical difficulties, which means he can't actually do any work if he wanted to. We may be coming to that in due course. Friends, we've been away for a while. That's because there's not really been a lot to talk about. But of course, that in itself is something to talk about. And that's what we're going to do today. Before we get going, though, boys, I want to make it very clear to you. I've got a message to you to start this podcast. I'm in no mood for frivolity, no mood for messing. I need us to be the very best versions of ourselves today. Because if we can be the very best versions of ourselves, I think we can put out a half-decent podcast, you know. Stu, how do you feel about that?
I trust the process, and it will carry us through.
Let's be brave, let's be bold, but let's not be reckless, AJ, please.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that we have to respect what other podcasts can do, but also know that we have our own strengths that we bring to the table and back ourselves to be better on the day.
This is too special of a podcast for us to mess it up today. So let's try not to. All right. Right, friends, we have to start, of course, I guess, with the most recent news in terms of stuff that's actually happened. And there's not been a lot of that. But this morning we've had some kit news. The club have put out via their newsletter. Quite a fun little game, actually. If you got the newsletter, you could scratch off the kit reveal date, which is this Saturday. Saturday, July the 5th. And obviously we've had some news around that this week as well, in terms of the front of shirt sponsor. And also the sleeve sponsor, Stu, which you largely led in terms of coverage. What did you make of this? Good to see. Obviously, we knew that Ed wasn't going to be the front of shirt sponsor anymore. Good to see another Suffolk company on the front, though. And it's not just another Suffolk company. It's a Suffolk company doing big things on a global level.
Yeah, I think it's important to say, give the club some accolades for standing firm in not following the crowd and in going with gambling sponsors, gaming sponsors, as they're referred to. No one seems to know what any of these 96.com 888 blah 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 ones are, to be honest. Halo. Didn't know much about them, to be honest. I live in mid Suffolk. I've kind of driven past Halo many times. Wasn't 100% sure what they did, to be honest. And then they appeared on the shirt sleeve, and I thought, what are they? And you kind of look into it, still didn't really know a great deal about them, but they're doing some more reading this week. They are mega. They're basically sort of, their description is disrupting the tech industry. They're software creators that are now selling products to Microsoft and Siemens and some major companies. They've got global offices all over in Melbourne and America and all sorts, sponsoring an McLaren F1 team recently, and now they're on the front of the Ipswich shirt. So, it's great to see Ipswich going back to local. We've had sort of in the past Fysons and Green King, and then after the Marcus Evans era and Magical Vegas, which looked pretty rubbish, didn't it?
Yeah.
Nice to be back local with Ed going. I think they're a fitting company to take over, I would say.
And Ashton said previously that it's a club record deal as well, Stu. So obviously very, very good from a business side of things for the club.
If they're paying more money than Ed Sheeran, then they've obviously got a few quid, haven't they? So I think Ed's been pretty clear that, obviously he took on the sponsorship in League One, probably didn't dream of doing it in the Premier League, and maybe cost him a little bit more than he was anticipating when he was interviewed at the Miami Grand Prix. Around this time last year, on the eve of the I can't remember, it was around the playoffs time, and he said, I am sponsor next year, but I am going to have to do a little bit more gigging, which is difficult when you're Ed Sheeran, and he seems to gig every night of the year anyway. Yeah. But I've got a pretty chunky sponsorship deal to pay for. So he managed to ride out his Premier League season, and now he's handed on the reins, and it's essentially a swap deal, isn't it, between front of shirt and shirt sleeve.
Yeah, Big Ed's still going to be on the sleeve, AJ. Have you ever had any tingly Teds?
No, I have not. I feel like we should have a tasting session.
Yeah, I meant to go out and get some this morning, actually, and do a little taste test live on the pod.
I'd be interested to
have a go.
I didn't know you could really buy them in supermarkets, so we are going to have to do that, I think. I think the biggest thing for me, aside from the positives that come with it not being any sort of gambling sponsors, and with it being a local brand and a big name brand, I think is also the logos look quite nice. I think it's really good. I mean, Halo in general, it's just simple and slick. And the one thing that you want with a shirt sponsor is it being simple and slick. West Ham have done their kits this morning, and it's Boyle Sports. It's a betting one. And it's just plastered right on the front of their shirt. And I think it looks horrible. And there's quite a few kits like that. And I think that obviously we'll have to wait and see what Ipswich looks like. But I think that with the logo that Halo have got, it feels like something that would suit an Ipswich kit on the front. And also even with the sleeve sponsor as well, seen some bad ones in the past. And from what we can see with the Tingly Teds one, although it's unique, I do quite like it as well.
Sainsbury's number one selling hot sauce, Tingly Teds, I'm told. I don't know if you boys have got much experience of hot sauce. I've had some in Barbados and St. Lucia. Very different levels of heat as well, I'd say. But Bayesian hot sauce, pretty mild. But then I made the mistake having been to Barbados of lathering it up in St. Lucia. A lot hotter, much to the entertainment of the people in the restaurant I was in as I stuck my tongue into a glass of milk. Stewie, that could be the freeze frame, actually, couldn't it? That for the whole podcast. Stewie, it's a good point that AJ makes. Halo, I mean, the other apart from the narrative behind Ed Sheeran and, you know, being a local boy done good and, you know, then sponsoring his football team. One of the great things about that was the logo looked brilliant. I mean, it's probably like the best logo in front of shirt sponsorship in football. And Halo, as what we've seen so far, again, looks just nice and classic, doesn't it? Classy. It's not one of these horrendous things like you mentioned, Magical Vegas.
Yeah, that was an abomination, wasn't it? Yeah. Not just because it was a gambling firm, but they stuck with the original logo to start with, which was like multicoloured, which stood out like a sore thumb on the shirt. They've just gone for the crisp white look, which, you know, ideally football shirts wouldn't have sponsors plastered all over them, but that's the business that we're in. So if you have to do it, at least make sure it's a right fit in terms of a local brand, not gambling. They've kept it white, ticked all the boxes, and it's bringing in some good money by the sounds of things as well. So everyone's a winner.
Right then, Stu, we have to talk about the kit itself. We'll see the new kits on Saturday for the first time. Clearly, this is another important stepping stone in the summer, something that fans get very, very excited about. We've had little teasers of what the kit's going to be. I mean, big surprise, it's blue. Obviously, there looks like there's some sort of diagonal pattern or decal on it. You got any thoughts on what you'd like to see, Stu, and particularly with the away kit? Because there's not that many more colours they can go to for the away kit, having the previous years. You're going to tell me you don't care, I know. In which case, I'll go to Alex.
Desperate times for the Kings of Anglia podcast. We're in such a fallow period in the summer that we're now going to dissect what the little 5x5 centimetre square part of the strip that we've seen. What could it mean? It will be a blue shirt again that has some sort of pattern in the background, which is slightly different to ones before. Will there be too much red? Will there be not enough red? Is the badge in the right position?
Will there be any yellow?
Yeah. Is it a V-neck? Is it a collar? I can't speak with it as much passion as others, although kits are a massive part of football, aren't they? We all grew up sort of loving kits and drawing pictures of kits. I had notebooks full of designed kits that I made and all that sort of stuff. So where are we at on the away kit colour rotation? So we've had, basically we go sort of a rotation, then we have orange, black, white, red.
Yeah, well, we've had maroon. Obviously we had the Inter Milan one, didn't we? That was the league one. Then we had orange, and at the moment we've got maroon. So
I say it every year. One day they'll go back to it, and Ipswich have worn yellow as an away kit. You're going back a little way now, but there's pictures of Mick Mills and co wearing a yellow shirt, no green anywhere near it. Absolutely, lots of blue trim. I like it, yellow and blue. It works. I know it will fall on deaf ears. I know the people in general, the majority are dead against it, but that's what I want, Mark. Something different.
Yeah, well, I think maybe yellow is probably harder sell these days as an away kit for Ipswich. AJ, I know you're more into the kit side of things, being as you're young and that. What would you like to see from the home kit? And also, dare you venture a guess at the colour of the away kit?
So I feel like it's always really difficult when two of the major colours on the palette are kind of out of bounds a bit, but I do agree with you in terms of there are things you can do with both yellows and greens, but I understand that that is going to be a very unpopular take from a lot of people, so I don't think that the club would go down that route, especially after a relegation. Wouldn't be great, would it, if suddenly they just come out with a yellow or a green kit. Let's have a guess then. Away shirt, I was just thinking this while I was looking at myself on the little screen there. I'm going to go white and red, because I'm wearing white and red. So we'll have that as the away. And third kits are usually where things get a little bit more funky. I'm going to go with a purple third.
Ooh, purple. Have we had any
purple yet? No, don't think we have we? So something like that, something that's a bit of fun. I was trying to think about what we've had with some of the Umbro ones before. Obviously, Cambridge have had a really good set of kits this year.
Black and gold.
Umbro, the home one's good. The away one is a little bit Newcastle Saudi kit. The third shirt is the one that I have at the moment, the black one, which I love. And it's got like the DNA imprint because of the whole Cambridge DNA links. Brilliant. Goalkeeper kit's really good. So I've got high hopes. And I think that they might try and do a bit of a unique colour. Purple's the one I'm gonna go with. There'll be a purple kit this year. Hot take.
I like the sound of purple. We've got no idea, so we're just guessing.
Some sort of tingly Ted's themed third shirt. Ed seems to have had his hands all over the third kits in recent years, hasn't he? With the pink one.
White,
last
just
year.
Covered in dollops of tingly Ted's.
Tingly Ted's is very orangey brand, isn't it? Looking at it, it's a hot sauce. Orange and green seems to be the colour palette there.
Oof. Flames would be very kind of
Like those kind of like the button 2000s. Up shirts, yeah, like one of those
with the flames on the sleeves.
Yeah, so like a black shirt with like flames, like either on the sleeves or like one that comes up from like the waist. Yeah,
yeah, that like a 15-year-old would have worn to a disco in like the early 2000s.
Yeah,
that kind
exactly.
Of thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
perfect.
I haven't actually confessions to you. I haven't actually really liked any town kits since the League One season when they were stone cold classics. Obviously,
do you want me? I've got them in front of me here. Shall I run through them and you can just give me some hits and misses? The away shirt last year was the sort of maroon with the gold,
which
gold
was all right.
Trim.
It was all right.
Yeah, and then we had the pink third shirt,
very much like that.
Various Suffolk themes on it, Ed Sheeran themes. Championship was orange. Championship promotion season was orange with sort of a navy blue trim, wasn't it? Sort of a very dark blue. And then a white pinstripe third kit.
That was my favourite one from last season. The season before now, obviously. I really didn't like the home shirt for the championship promotion winning season. It was too much of a throwback. Too big as well. I remember players saying they thought it was too big.
Too much white on the sleeves. That was quite a lot of white on the sleeves, wasn't there? League One.
Classics.
That was the red and white, red and blue.
Black,
red and black.
Into Milan,
vertical stripes and sort of various different widths.
Sorry, AC Milan.
AC Milan,
not Inter. Yeah, Milan. Definitely not Inter. AC Milan.
We fudged that between us, didn't we?
Yeah. blue, black, what?
And then the blackout third kit.
Those three were stone cold classics. All three of those shirts.
The goalkeeper kit. I've got the list up as well. The goalkeeper kits as well. I really like from that year. They're a really strong little selection.
Was that the year they had a pink one, the goalkeeper kit?
The two that they have on here, one of them's kind of like a green one, which has little patterny bits on. And I mean, I could just kind of hold them up and you can see. Hopefully my ring light doesn't ruin it. That's the right one. There we go. So that's one of them.
Yeah.
And the other one was, the one I was just talking about, was that one there with the green.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember
and
that.
The red. So there you go. For subscribers who want to see what kits I'm referring to. Yeah, those ones I liked.
Those are the last ones I really like, though. I think that League One season. I thought all three were obviously the blackout one's probably my favourite one. They've maybe ever done, thinking about it.
What more? I think from the season before, just having a look at, I quite like those as well. They look very slick. It looks like, so that was 21-22, standard blue shirt. I like kind of the size of the sponsor, and then they've gone with a white away and a black third. Again, I'll hold them up there, so we got them. There's your selection from 21-22.
I was really not bored massive by fan. The away shirt. No, I thought that away shirt was incredibly dumb.
I like simple, slick kit. I feel like you're the kind of, maybe this is where we're kind of different here, is that I remember when it was announced they were doing a pink kit, you were like, yes,
yeah,
bold colours, craziness, make it insane. And I quite like, you know, blue.
I don't think pink's insane. I just think it's nice.
Well, strong I'd pink. Like, how many do you know of like strong pink kits?
Well, that's why I like it. I like, okay, if they do a purple, I'd like that as well.
Yeah, that's fair.
What were your, just before we move on from this complete speculation fest, what were your favourite kits, boys, when you were growing up? What were your favourite kits to wear? I had the classic, do you remember the grey Liverpool candy one? A big favourite of mine. I think that's probably the one I wore most as a child. How about you, Stu?
Yeah, child of the 90s, Everton fan growing up. My first kit was a white away kit. NEC is the sponsor, with like a grey speckled sash across the middle. That was when kits were quite funky.
Yeah,
back then.
They're also massive.
Yes, yeah, really, like really tent. Baggy. Yeah. Yeah. And Everton had quite a lot of yellow in their away kits as well. Yellow and blue. So I had a few away kits like that that I loved.
How about you, AJ? I assume you were bedecked in used colours as a child.
Not that you've got to remember. I didn't live in Cambridge until
of course you're in Holland, weren't you?
Over 30, yeah. Liverpool Carlsberg would have been the one that comes to mind for me. Cannot remember the year exactly, but there's definitely a photo of me wearing that somewhere that I tried to have a look to find, but can't see. That's my kind of generation of shirts. I think because obviously when I was a child, I outgrew that one fairly quickly because I would have been like six. I think I went to go and buy another one, when would that have been, like 5 years ago. That's the one that always stands out to me. Proper nostalgia, the Liverpool Carlsberg kits for me.
Excellent. Boys, we've managed to fill almost 17 minutes waffling on, speculating about what the kit might be. So we think AJ's going purple. I would like purple. I do feel though maybe it may be coming back towards a white sort of top. And obviously the third kit, I'm assuming, will be something we see at a later date. Other thing to talk about before we get on to what I'm sure most of you want to hear us talk about, which is signings / lack of, is since we last spoke, we've had a departure. Another one of these sad departures, Stu. Axel Tuenzebe, we kind of felt the longer it went on, the more likely it was that he was going to leave. He has left. He's gone to Burnley. Your thoughts, please.
Disappointed with this one. It sort of explains why Cameron Burgess happened and how there was no one to blame on that for all parties. Axel, I thought they had a better chance of keeping. When we sort of talked about the two, I could see why Ipswich and Cameron's needs, wants wouldn't align. I thought they could align with Axel. I thought Ipswich would be in a position to say, we were the ones that gave you your chance when you were free agent, and you know, it got to September before anyone picked him up, and he had a couple of years of barely playing with a back injury problem. Ipswich have built him up, made him robust again, got him playing some good football. Absolutely, I think he proved that he was a Premier League player in terms of his athleticism last season. But I hoped that Ipswich would be able to say, come on, stick with us, be a part of the project. Burnley on a one-year deal is interesting. So I understand why he wants to go back to the Prem and stay in that shop window, if you like, or be playing against the best, having been there earlier in his career and maybe felt like he's a few years of a short career of slipped by because of injuries. But there's every chance that those two teams could cross over in a year's time. I would hope, and I don't know this, but I would hope that Ipswich would have been in a position to offer him a two-year deal as opposed to a one-year deal. Maybe they didn't. I need to look into that a little bit more. But I'm told that it was a good contract offer that was on the table. geography plays a big part in this. I sometimes think we underestimate that.
Yeah. As,
you know, we all have lives and roots in different places, and Axel's roots are up in Manchester. So, you know, I'm sure that played a big, big part in it, wanting to get back up there. But, yeah, a bit disappointed that Axel's not stayed, because when fit, he was one of Ipswich's best players last season.
I think he actually made reference in the signing thing to it, being able to go back up north being a bit of a pull for him, AJ. What's your take on this? And I guess the next question is, which we've discussed already, but now he's gone, do they need to replace him?
Disappointed, naturally, of course. I think that it's also one that does make sense for the reasons that Stu has lined out there, for him geographically, for wanting to be in the Premier League. Don't forget, on a one-year deal as well, it has been mentioned about the one-year deal being for him to prove his fitness. It probably also be a case of Burnley to prove that they can be in the Premier League, because if he goes and has a good season with them, I think by the looks of it, he's coming in to replace CJ Egan-Riley, that kind of right centre-back role. Again, something that I think he's wanted to do. I'm not sure how he's felt about the right-back role. It looks like, I think he'd be playing right centre-back at Burnley. So he comes in and does that, has a good season, Burnley go down. Then he's, again, in a situation where he doesn't have those ties. He can go and have another move if he wants to, and he doesn't have that kind of obligation to stay and hope that Burnley sell him if they're relegated. So, yeah, I kind of can understand that from his perspective, and how that's maybe been put out as a little bit of, well, let's see how his fitness is, and I'm sure Burnley will be seeing that as well. So, yeah, it's obviously a blow, and it's disappointing and frustrating. I also think that from an Ipswich perspective, as painful as it is to lose a player of his quality, I think there are definitely ways around it, and maybe not positives to see a bit, but kind of other caveats that come into it. You've got to think about his availability as well. There have been big issues with that. You're coming into a championship season where you're playing much more regularly, and if he's going to be a key player, not having him available for portions of the season will hurt. Don't forget AFCON. AFCON takes place in the winter. He's going to potentially miss a month of the campaign just to go and play there. That runs from mid-December until mid-January. And having had a look at it, Congo have got a pretty easy group and a decent run to get quite deep into that competition. He goes away there and he's missing a key part of the season for Burnley if he's called up and plays for that one. So I think there's that part of it. And as well, as we'll kind of come on to, I think Ipswich are in a good position with their right-sided defensive options as well. So, yeah, I can understand why he's moved on. I am disappointed, but life goes on. And I think Ipswich will be all right.
Town are just sharing, actually. I've just seen that they're sharing pictures of the players coming back into training this morning. Mm-hmm. So we're another step closer. We've got Ben Johnson there. Chio is there as well, which is good. Great to see. And I have to say, Harry Clark looking in very decent nick indeed. I'd love to know, I always say this, boys, why don't they screen the bleep test on the first day back? Make that a pay-per-view thing. I would pay to watch the players to see who would win the bleep test. Who would be your money on? Who would your money be on, Stu, if you get the words out in the right order? Who would to win the bleep test today?
Leif Davis would have to be up there.
Leif, yeah.
Ultra fit, isn't he, up and down that left-hand side? I believe Cameron Humphreys is one that can run and run and run. Any other contenders?
Can they do the keeper separately? Because they don't really need to be able to run up and down. I'd love to know. I want the stats. Hutchie, if you're out there, send me a message. Let me know who wins.
He's the one on the sidelines, like, doing all the data input and everything.
It just fascinates me that, you know, because clearly in the old days, footballers come back about 4 stone overweight because they were just drinking all summer, and then they'd spend the first 3 weeks of pre-season just running, getting the weight off. Whereas now they come back and they're in the same sort of shape as they went away, and they get their body fat done, don't they? The calipers come out. I'd be fascinated by all the stats behind that.
And they all do their extra work in their summer holidays, and they hire personal trainers and stuff to take with them on holiday, or they go off. It's a bit like people that have to post all their runs on Strava on social media. It officially hasn't happened unless you share it with everybody else.
Well, it also, yeah, I mean, I if you go to the gym and you've not got your wearable tech, for example, or your heart rate monitor, there's no point doing it. What's the point? It's just as if it never happened. If I can't write it down, so if I can't put it into my app, it means it's never happened. So, yeah, but obviously we know from Sam Morsey, they all went away with workout plans they had to do every single week and hand them in and send them back. So I'm sure they're going to be coming back in tip-top shape.
Caused some drama with that tweet that's just gone out. They posted all those photos, and then they've updated it and taken Harry Clark's one out of the post. They posted, originally it was
I'd seen Harry, yeah.
Shio and Alex Palmer and Harry Clark, and then it just says there's a new version of this post.
Oh, so
Harry
there
Clark
is
gone.
And Harry's looking in tip-top condition as well. Interesting.
Yeah, that's a little bit. So they've now posted it a third time with Harry Clark in it.
Oh, okay.
So conspiracy who theories. Knows what's going on.
Stand
maybe,
down.
Maybe he is being sold to Real Madrid. I'm not sure.
Right then, Stu. This is we've managed to fill 25 minutes so far before we get to the meat of the podcast, which I'm sure is what most people want to talk about. We're at various stages of the summer. We've passed the fixtures. We're about to do the kit. We are now at the why haven't we signed anyone stage. And then from this, we'll probably move to the, okay, we signed someone, why haven't we signed a striker stage? Stu, Town haven't made a signing yet. There have been a few people leaving. There's been a little bit of gnashing of teeth, the old noisy minority on social media, demanding signings. I feel that mine to bring back a phrase I used a lot last summer in the Kieran McKenna saga. Let's all calm down, shall we? We already know how strong Town's squad is already before making a signing. They don't need that many signings. Am I wrong, Stu?
Thank you for not doing the Harry Enfield Liverpool voice there when you said calm down. So every year it's always the same, isn't it? We get to this little period of the summer where people get a bit twitchy. They just get a little bit bored, really. Everyone loves their football so much. They've got this insatiable appetite for news. And we're not getting it at the moment. I've been keeping up to date the sort of transfer in and outs on our website. There's a story that you can bookmark that we've been updating. I've been trying to update on a daily basis. By my reckoning, there's only four clubs left in the Championship who haven't signed a player so far this summer. Ipswich, one of them. The other three are Sheffield Wednesday, who are in absolute crisis, not being able to pay their players at the moment. Talk of players walking away from their contracts. Leicester without a manager still at the moment. They haven't appointed, have they? Post Ruud van Nistelrooy. And Middlesbrough are the only other one. And they've only just appointed Rob Edwards themselves. So not many. And by my reckon, I think we're around the 60 mark for players that have signed, totting them up. The first thing I'd ask you is go through that list of 60 players that have signed before you sort of go, why aren't we signing anyone? How many of those would you take? How many of those would you say Ipswich have missed out on them? They would definitely strengthen our squad. I picked out a handful in a piece that we're going to publish later in the week that I could make a case for, saying that they could improve the squad, but I wouldn't really make an impassioned argument to say that Ipswich have completely dropped the ball with someone that could come in and upgrade the starting 11. So I think that's a starter point to say, why haven't we signed anyone? Tell me out of those who you would have had.
Tommy Doyle, most recently, probably would be one that stands out. Just gone to Birmingham. There aren't many, I'd agree. I think the controversial one, and it would not be as a starter, obviously, but as he was one of the ones I'd had listed as a Burgess replacement, Harry Darling, who's gone somewhere else, let's just say. But when you look through the list as well, and don't forget, a lot of these kind of early transfers have been free transfers, and it's been waiting for players to go in and leave on at the end of their contracts. You've seen that with Burgess and you've seen that with Axel Tuanzebe. And when you look through the list, a lot of these are free transfers, and there aren't that many clubs who are like splashing the cash. And I think Ipswich are not going to really be going heavily down a free transfer route.
I liked Kane Kessler-Hayden, who's signed for Coventry, £3.5 million, right back. We've just been talking about whether Ipswich need a right back after Axel left.
Kwame Poku,
who was obviously linked, right winger, who's gone from Peterborough to QPR. So there's a few you could throw in there, but these sort of players, putting the right back situation aside, we're not necessarily talking about Ipswich signing them as out and out starters. Probably only the central midfielder role that Ipswich are going to be going to and saying, you're going to be a week in, week out starter for everyone else, and there'll be an honest conversation. You could make that spot your own, but you've got some serious competition. And you've mentioned Harry Darling there, a few others. That's essentially come in, but it's pretty obvious that O'Shea and Greaves are the centre-half partnership. So that's where players are going to weigh up, even if Ipswich are interested. I'd rather go to Norwich, for example, and play in it, play every week. And there'll be a lot of conversations like that. So it is still quite early. This time last year, I look back at it, I think it was Amari Hutchinson loan becoming a permanent, and Ben Johnson, Bosman free transfer from West Ham. They were the only two transfers done by this stage. Yes, the transfer window opened at the start of June, shut again for a week, and then reopened. It feels like it's been open for quite a while now, but you have to remember the sort of financial year starts in July, and Ipswich pushed themselves to the limit with PSR last year. Mark Ashton's been pretty open about that, that we pushed things as far as we possibly could within sort of healthy parameters of not being bold and reckless, the comments you made at the very start of the pod. But there wasn't probably a whole load of wriggle room to make early transfers. So really, the transfer window opened at the start of July, and we're recording this on July the 3rd at the moment. So it is still very early days. I would hope that things will start to... It's normally sort of middle of July that things start to hot up. So, it might be a different conversation if things are all still very quiet in another fortnight or so's time. But at the moment, I'm pretty sanguine about it all.
Yeah, I feel like with the players now coming back and things starting to tick towards the first preseason games, this is where you tend to start to see signings. Let me rephrase the question then, Stu, AJ. Are you surprised that they've not made a signing yet? Because we know that Mark Ashton, Mr. Relentless, likes to get his business done early. He's always said that. So are you surprised that we've not seen a signing yet?
No, I think if there was like a major player that stood out or a major target, and I know that they need to work on the midfield, but I mean, I did a piece earlier this week looking at what the strongest town team would be if the season started tomorrow. I'd be happy taking that starting lineup to Birmingham, to be perfectly honest. I think it is a strong enough group of 11 players, and I don't think it will be that 11 playing. I think that there will be signings in. I'd imagine there's a good chance it could be one or at least two new midfielders, for example. But with that in mind, I think that there's no real rush and pressure to go and get these deals done when other teams in this league aren't going out and pulling off any kind of real eye-catching moves, as she said, especially in midfield. Doyle was the only one that kind of stood out to me going to Birmingham. So I'm not really surprised, and more than anything, I'm just calm about it. I think if they can get a body through the door before we go to Austria in a fortnight, I think that would be a good enough position to be in. I just don't think that there's that much work to be done. And one of the things that Mark Ashton has spoken about is its retention over signings. And that is going to be a big thing. This squad for the level is really, really good. And the importance has to be keeping players together. Amari, Jaden Philogene, Jack Clark, who've proven what they can do at this level. Rather than going and adding new players, which they will do. They will add new players before the start of the season, but I'm not worried or surprised that they haven't done it yet. It's July 3rd. It's fine.
Sorry, Mark. I was going to say, I mean, yeah, it's quality over quantity this summer, isn't it? Yes, we want players in early. Ideally, as Alex says, you get them in time for the pre-season training camp away in Austria. Because that's a time to kind of bond with teammates and to kind of be drilled in the methods working under a new manager. But wanting to do things early and being able to do things early is two different things. If anyone thinks that people behind the scenes are sitting twiddling their thumbs, that's naive. Kieran McKenna was asked before the West Ham game at the end of the season, was being relegated with four games to go, does it provide a bit of a head start on next season, knowing what division you're in? And he said, yes, absolutely. We've had conversations with targets already. So those conversations will have been happening probably way back at the start of this calendar year, I would imagine. There'll be several plates spinning. Mark Ashton has kind of talked about no holidays and relentless attitude and all that sort of stuff. And yes, there's some, dare I say, it's like David Brentism to that. But, you know, I it's true. You know, there is a really hard-working ethos behind the scenes at Ipswich Town, and that is clear. So they will be doing everything they can, but sometimes you have to wait for the dominoes to fall. Sometimes you have to wait, for example, with loan players, Premier League clubs. We've just had a summer where we've had the under-21 Euros, the Club World Cup. Then players, these clubs will go off to Japan and America and all their global tours, and some players might be still being given an extra rest, so they feel like they need to bring young players and fringe players as kind of squad fillers before, and they'll wait till they get players in before they let players out, and it's just a bit of a holding pattern. So Ipswich will have made sure that they're hopefully at the front of the queue for some of these sort of lone players. I think McKenna's got enough of a reputation now as a player developer that Ipswich have got that relationship now, that trust to take players. So there'll be a lot of things frantically happening behind the scenes. Just a little bit of a waiting game at the moment.
I think that consistency is such an underrated thing in the Championship when you come down. Where how many teams do you see get relegated? I think this will happen with both Leicester and Burnley Leicester and Southampton this year. All these teams blur into one sometimes. Where they've got like 5, 6, 7, 8 players that have to be sold, and they're kind of like these big ticket items, big name players that have to go. Think about when Leeds came down, you saw players like Sinisterra playing and he was off, and then Nonto went on strike and they lost Tyler Adams and Rodrigo went. Burnley last year, over the summer, they have such a huge squad churn. Yeah, I know they still went on and got promoted. They lost Muric, obviously, Odebert, Sander Berge, Anas Zarouri, O'Shea, Weghorst, John Egan. There's so many players that kind of had to go out at that point. With Town, you don't have that same feeling. There is now a consistent core, and I can't think of that many teams that come down from the Premier League with a consistent core of really top-end players that should be staying and aren't going to be realistically on the move this summer. So that's one of the things that excites me. Just not having a huge summer of change ahead of a relegation into a lower league, I think, can be such a big thing.
It's not as exciting, is it? But you have to remember that the step up into the Championship, how quiet that transfer window was. Because if Ipswich had effectively built their Championship squad in League One, they'd done their business in the January with Broadhead, Luongo, Harry Clark, George Hurst. Then the summer rolled round. We were all excited about who they're going to sign now as a second-tier club. And all they really did was sign Hurst permanently. Jack Taylor. Wasn't a lot else beyond that, was there? Really, in terms
Amari
of
Amari on loan,
yeah, Hutchinson on loans. There was bits and pieces, but it wasn't like a major summer of change, was it? They just added little bits and pieces, but really the squad was in place. And you can argue that again, the business in preparation for this season has already happened. The signings they made last summer were realistically, pragmatically, with half an eye on the potential for relegation. They built the Championship super squad, inverted commas, at the start of a Premier League season. So kind of keeping hold of that, as Alex says, is just as important, if not more so, than adding new ones to it.
Consistency is not sexy, though, is it, boys? That's the problem. If anyone says to you, what's the best thing about this team? And you go, they're consistent. You go, doesn't really get me going. And we understand, friends, as you listen to this, summer is for signing. Signings are exciting. And I'll be honest with you as well, friends, we quite like a signing because we're starting to run out of, as you may have noticed, starting to run out of things to talk about and write about. So, it would, you know, a signing would be nice. But there is also an important part of this conversation, Stu, which you wrote a bit about, actually, which is just look at how strong the squad already is before they've even made any signings. I mean, AJ referenced his starting 11 there. You went back and looked at all the bloody accolades. Show me your medals. Your awards in the squad already, which is definitely worth reflecting on, isn't it? Because if you look at the level they're going into and what the players they've got, who are definitely going to be here, have already done, it looks pretty bloody good.
I'll just whiz for a potential starting 11 now, which Alex has kind of put one together. There's probably a debate around one or two players as to who people would go with, but on the whole, you've got Alex Palmer, Championship Golden Glove winner at West Brom last time he had a full season in the Championship. You've got Leif Davis, record-breaking assist season for a defender last time he was at this level. Greaves was team of the year for Hull before Ipswich signed him. Dar O'Shea's just spent two seasons in the Premier League and had Premier League interest this summer. Right back, we didn't really sort of dwell too much on whether Ipswich need an Axel replacement, but at the moment it's Ben Johnson and Harry Clark. Harry Clark played a big role in Ipswich's promotion last time around. Ben Johnson's never played below the Premier League. He's won a Europa Conference League, played a role in that for West Ham. So maybe people are underestimating, you know, his value in this squad and his ability to step into the right back role. Sam Morsi is Sam Morsi, serial promotion winner throughout his career. We talked about maybe the need for another midfielder in there. Amari's just won the Euro under 21s. Whether he'll stay, we don't know. Connor Chaplin's been Ipswich's top goal scorer for a couple of seasons in a row prior to the Premier League. The list goes on. Sammy Smodic scored 27 goals. Yeah. Championship top goal scorer last time he was in the league.
Jack Clark absolutely tore, you know,
lit it up for Sunderland player of the season for them. And George Hurst, you know, without having one of those kind of accolades to put to him, we're all kind of hopeful from what we've seen that he's more than capable of stepping up. So when you say it out loud and you go through the squad, and that's before we kind of look at some of the injured players coming back, and you know, we haven't mentioned Broadhead, et cetera, in there. It's a pretty good starting point, isn't it?
I think recency bias can be a bit of a thing, can't it? Because I think you can almost be guilty of putting aside, let's say, Jack Clark, for example. I've had a couple of debates on Twitter with kind of Jack Clark and what he can bring. And you can almost forget what he's done at Championship level when you think, well, Premier League, too lightweight, didn't offer anything, didn't score any goals. He got four assists, but people are surprised when I say he's got four assists. That's the most in the team in the league last year. Dayden Philogene, too lightweight, only played a handful of goals, scored a lucky brace at Man United. And you can go through and look at kind of different players. I mean, Jacob Greaves, another one, and go through and say, well, they didn't cut it in the Premier League. It didn't work out. They had poor performances, et cetera, et cetera. The Premier League and the Championship are very, very, very different ballparks. Let's make this clear. You can be one of the best players in the Premier League, sorry, in the Championship, and just not really be able to find your feet in the Premier League. And there are different circumstances that come in with that, with a handful of Ipswich players. You look at Jack Clark, late in the window, different role. Jaden Philogene, signed 6 months later than he should have done, for example. Those are the two that stand out. But look at what they've done at Championship level. You cannot ignore that, and you cannot write it off based off the fact that they've struggled against Liverpool and Manchester City and Man United and Chelsea and Arsenal. And you have to factor in, he's scored 40 goals for Sunderland, contributed to 40 goals for Sunderland over the course of two seasons. He was one of the most highly coveted players for Barcelona and whoever he was linked to last summer. He was in the Championship team of the year and was linked to West Ham. There's so many different things that you can go through, and it's really important not to ignore those, because they're not playing Liverpool and City next year. They're playing, respectfully, Preston, Charlton and Hull.
Luton obviously are the example that people all throw out, that you can do a Luton, right? But I think Ipswich are far more likely to do a Burnley / Sheffield United than they are a Luton next season. I think that's fair to say. Burnley got 24 points when they got relegated. They got 100 last year. Sheffield United got 16. They got 90 last year with a 2-point deduction as well, was it? So I think people forget the chasm between Premier League and Championship that is growing. And like Alex says, the struggles in the Premier League are fresh in people's minds, but maybe forgetting just how good these players have been, are proven at Championship level.
Yeah. Just going back to the Axel thing, I feel really good about the right back spot, to be honest. If you look at, as you say, Ben Johnson playing in the Championship for the first time, you've got Harry Clark, part of the promotion winning side, potentially as a backup, and then you've got Dar O'Shea as well, who can cover there. Same at left back with Greaves, isn't it? I think that's a really strong situation there. So for me, I'm quite happy with that. The other thing I'd like to say before we move on is, can we put some respect on Sam Morsi's name, please? Because I'm seeing people saying we've got no ambition because we're not saying they need to replace Morsi. This is a guy who did something that has never been done before. Back-to-back promotion-winning skipper. Yes, he's 33, but he lives the life, as they say in boxing. He's a top-tier, really dedicated athlete, and I think he's earned the right to go again in the midfield next season. I'd be more than happy with that. friends, I want to talk about, before we move on to potential targets, AJ, because you've written something around that this morning, some quotes from Ashton, which I thought were really interesting, around recruitment, which came up in his Talksport interview, which was quite good fun, listening to Ashton being interviewed by Simon Jordan, who I think a natural best mate. He was asked about the kind of biggest learnings from the Premier League and what they'll take. And he said the biggest one was recruitment. I'll just actually read these quotes because I think they are interesting. So he said, I think it's recruitment, recruitment, recruitment. One of the things that we learned was that the gap in physicality, the physical attributes of players that are required in the Premier League. When we look to recruit players now in the Championship, we have to adjust and amend how we recruit players. We need to look at players with the physical attributes because the reality is Kieran can coach them, but you can't develop the physical attributes to the level you need to compete. So it's an evolution for us. We have to look at recruiting a different type of player, a player with a different set of physical attributes. Now, I find this fascinating because we've talked about it a lot. And that was, for me, one of the most eye-opening things in the Premier League was just the sheer athleticism and physicality of the players, proper units, real athletes. And to hear Ashton say that, AJ, I thought was really interesting in terms of actually changing the way they recruit to look at that sort of player, obviously with an eye of getting back into the Premier League and doing better than they did.
Yeah, I think that it's quite easy to be caught out by that. And I remember going through some of those recruitment bits I did last year, and maybe not something that I factored in as well. And I think that supporters can be guilty of that. And quite often when you look at players and how often do you want to sign the 5'8" dribbly attacking player who's great fun and scores goals and can offer things going forward? Physical profile and attributes can fly under the radar so easily. And I didn't really notice it for the first half of the season. I think I've mentioned this before. The game where it stood out to me was Crystal Palace at home, and they played a 3-4-3 formation, and their three centre-backs, Gehi, Lacroix and Chalobah would have been, I think, in that game, were colossal. They're massive. And then I was watching Liam Delap go up against them. There was three of them there. He was kind of just bouncing off them because they're huge guys. That was where it really stood out to me. And then you start actually paying attention to it more in games. And you look at midfielders who are big, physical, can drop into the back line, can shield the ball, can offer the protection there. Premier League athletes are very different to what you see in any other sport, in any other league, in football, and actually in any other league in the world. You don't get the same thing in La Liga or Serie A. There are players who have those attributes abroad, but it's not leagues that are necessarily known for it. When you watch the Premier League, that's where you start to notice it. And maybe one of the bits that really stood out to me, getting to go in all the mix zones means that you're standing next to the players as they come past. I've had that in a few times now. In the Premier League, you're just like, I'm not the tallest of people, but when you're watching some of these guys come past, you're just like, Jesus, and I'm Connor Chaplin's height. I can just imagine him bouncing right off of one of them. So, and that was obviously something that Ipswich missed. I think midfield was the big area for that. Calvin Phillips brought it a bit, wasn't available. Jens Kyusta had a bit of height, but maybe didn't have the same kind of huge physical prowess about him. Sam Morsey, probably not the tallest as well. So that was one of the areas where you look at it and say, should they have done more there for the physicality side of things? But definitely it's good that they've come out and said, actually, this is one of the areas we should have been stronger at with the recruitment side of things. Bodes well for kind of learning going forward ahead of hopefully another Premier League campaign soon.
It's not just when you talk about athleticism, we're not just talking about the physical size, which is obviously a big part of it. And I think Ipswich have been undersized at times. When you go through a team sometimes and you look at Hutchinson, Chaplin, Morsi, there's been a bit of height at the back, but you need to supplement that at times. And there were some set piece goals started to go in the second half of the season. But it's also that it's speed as well, isn't it? So when we're talking about athleticism, it's pace. You talk about like coming up against people like Elanga and people like that. And that's why Axel, I think, looked at home in the Premier League, because he had that athleticism. He was one of the few players that could keep pace with Elanga, even though he ended up twanging his hammy, I think, in a foot race with him. But he was able to do that. And there's very few players that can operate at that level of, elite athlete. So I did Jason Dizel's book, as you know, and I remember speaking to him about whether how he would be suited to today's modern game. He was sort of a languid, classy playmaker, and whether, you know, it was a more physical game in terms of what you're allowed to get away with in terms of fouls back in the day. But so would he have enjoyed today's kind of passing game a little bit more? And he sort of said yes, but Premier League clubs now sign athletes first that they can develop into footballers, rather than signing footballers that you can develop into athletes. And that is essentially what, you know, the quote you've just read out from Mark Ashton there, really.
I think when I talk about athleticism, I mean is, like, yes, physical size is one part of it, but it's the ability to move with that size and to get around. And, you know, Traore, for example, at Fulham is an absolute tank, but his feet are so quick. He's so athletic. You think he's going to be like a tanker, you know, a huge turning circle, slow as molasses, but he was so quick with his feet on the ball. It was unbelievable. And that combination of size and athleticism is incredible in the Premier League. Sorry, AJ, I cut across yourself.
I was just going to say, Keogh, I think in that respect, was absolutely a big miss. Last year, again, did a bit looking at injured players you shouldn't forget about. He tops the list for me. He's really feels like a new signing, Claxton. But when you look at his profile as a Premier League player, you know, he's actually done quite well contributing to goals, but I think that the goals and the assists that he's scored are just kind of a minor footnote actually in what he offers. And that is the perfect Kieran McKenna right sider. That is searing pace. That is a real kind of physical presence. He's strong. He's a big physical guy. And you don't really notice that until I watched a few clips of him from the Premier League games at the start of the season, and the way he handles himself with the pace that he has, then being able to contribute in the final third, then also being able to drop back and support with that kind of profile that he has physically. Not having him for, I mean, how many games did he play? Five? That's such a big miss from Town's perspective. And he's one of those I think would have really helped in that regard. So excited to see him next season, at least.
One of the key things, I think, in that quote as well was Ashton saying McKenna, he can coach players and make them better, but he can't make them, you know, physically superior. You either are, there's a saying in basketball, you can't teach height, you can't teach being 7 foot. You either are an elite athlete or you're not. And you have a ceiling of athleticism, which can't be changed. You can obviously put weight on, you can put size on, you can make yourself stronger, but everyone has a baseline at which they, or a kind of upper level, which they can reach. And you either are genetically able to be an elite athlete or you're not, unfortunately. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with recruitment.
They didn't completely neglect that last year. Let's not forget that Liam Delap is an absolute
he's an athlete. Yeah.
So they got that right. Chio, as you say, they got unlucky with. I think only Mickey van der Ven at Spurs clocked a faster sprint time in a game in the Premier League the previous season than Ogbeni. So, you know, Wes is obviously someone who adds that speed down the right. They were sort of, that got taken away. Calvin Phillips is someone who has proven himself to be an elite athlete. Ipswich obviously didn't get him at full tilt, unfortunately, last season. Or weren't able to get him to full tilt. We'll never know how much of a difference he would have made. So, and I mean, like Ben Johnson, I think, is capable of being an elite athlete. He's someone who's got speed and can get up and down as well. So they did think about that last year. I wouldn't say it's something that they completely underestimated. They had a bit of bad luck with it, but... maybe broadening the market to find some of these athletes is probably something that they need to look at now and casting the net a bit further afield.
They're after tanks, they're after monsters. Has Ashton been on the phone, Stu?
I've told you, all that's gone to absolute pot, mate. I've done absolutely nothing for about 8 weeks now.
Are you saying you are in shape? Round is a shape. AJ. Talk to me about recruitment then, in terms of, I asked you to put your recruitment hat on and tell me some players who you'd sign this summer, or the players you'd sign this summer. And you've written a piece this morning, which is available for subscribers. And we'll talk about subscribers in a minute. So I don't want you to give away the whole farm, but do you want to just tease us, just tantalize us maybe with a name or two you may have thrown into the mix and your thinking around it? Because you not only did signings, who you'd sign, but also who you'd let go. Move on.
Yeah, I think you tasked me with doing the players I'd signed for Ipswich, probably thinking I'd come up with like seven or eight, name. And I thought, you know what? Let's plan out. Let's do a little recruitment piece here and think about everything. So we factored in squad sizes, the limits, how Ipswich can get around that, what players would need to come in, who would need to go. As things stand, Ipswich have a squad. Stu did this bit a couple of weeks ago where it was 26 man. Axel Tuanzebe has left since that piece has gone out. It's 25 man squad. They're at the limit. So you're kind of in a one in, one out policy. There are ways around that, which you can find out about if you read my bit that I've done. But essentially, that's where they're at the moment. And there are players who will likely move on in some capacity. Don't think it's any spoilers to say that those players would probably be Kieran Slicker, Elkin Baggett, and if possible, Arrow Muric would be the ones you probably look at trying to move on. And that would then free up the spots there. So in my mind, I think they probably need four. That's the magic number that I've landed on. Position-wise, I think you're looking at a Burgess replacement. Two midfielders, I think, is the way to play it. And then a striker. I've been going through and doing recruitment bits, looking at eight strikers that Town can sign, eight midfielders. We've had Burgess replacements, we've had Tuanzebe replacements. They're all there. You can go see them. They're all linked in this piece as well. I'll give you a midfielder because I think that's the sexy one at the moment, isn't it? Weirdly, because it should be strikers, and I've gone for an interesting name at striker. I'll tease that.
You have, yeah. It was a complete left field one, yeah.
Yeah, well, in a way, yeah. I think that there's a good reason.
He's certainly not been discussed. Yeah,
he's not been discussed. But yeah, he's one that I've watched a little bit of now, and I really really like. So go find out who that is. Go have a read. The midfielder that stands out to me and has done for a while. Tyler Morton. I think he's really good, and we've now seen some of it at the Euros. I think he might be in a bit of an Amari situation where people didn't realise how good he was until they watched him at the Euros, and that could then attract some more interest. But I think when I started doing the recruitment stuff, when I was looking at the players, I remember sat in a hotel lobby waiting to check in after a win at Bournemouth, and the player that I landed on then was Tyler Morton, and I think that he is a really strong fit. Let's look at him physically. 6 foot tall, has a strong build, has proven himself in the Football League. He's now had two seasons in the Championship, 40 games with Blackburn, 39 with Hull, which means that he also knows some of those players there. He's played with Jaden Philogene and he's played with Jacob Greaves. Could also be a bit of a factor there. He knows a lot of Ipswich players, so that can help as well. Come through an elite academy in Liverpool. He's been there since 2009. We know that Kieran McKenna likes those kind of players who've had that background. Can play either side of the two. I just think that him learning from Sam Morsy, developing under Kieran McKenna, getting a strong campaign in what would hopefully be a promotion-winning season at Ipswich, then going on to have a crack at being a regular Premier League player, be the perfect trajectory for him. Probably cost a fair whack, I'd say at least 15 million, but Ipswich don't need to sign that many players, which means that you can put more money onto your main targets. He would be right at the top of my list, I think. And yeah, we've seen some of that in the last few weeks at the Euros. He'd be the one I'd go after. But yeah, go have a read of that. I've picked out four players. I've looked at who can go, who could come in, and what my kind of final squad would look like, a nice little graphic which shows a potential lineup and bits like that. Yeah, not a huge amount of work to be done, I don't think.
It's very much worth a read, that. Go and read that if you've not seen it yet. Stewie, Tyler Morton, you said before when we did the squad audit, you think midfield is where the majority of the money is going to be spent. If it is 15 million or so, does that seem reasonable to you?
Yeah, Hayden Hackney's the one that I would like. Don't know how gettable he would be and what sort of price would be involved with that. A fair chunk of money, but Ipswich
seen 25 mentioned online.
Yeah, so I'd say that's unlikely. I mean, he was one I picked out last summer. He's gone on to have another fantastic season with Middlesbrough. I've just gone on to whoscored.com where you can kind of put in various rudimentary stats. It's not quite as in-depth as the football industry will use, far from it, but you know, I look at what Ipswich will need in that role. It's someone who can take the ball from the goalkeeper / centre halves, look after the ball, that can carry the ball up the pitch. Hackney rates second in the Championship last season for total passes. He's high in terms of accurate short and long passes. He's fifth in terms of successful dribbles. So He's got a bit of everything about him. He's young as well, lots of room for developing. There's the Michael Carrick, Kieran McKenna link as well. Carrick now gone at Middlesbrough, so I'm sure he would be putting in a good word about Ipswich being a destination of choice for him. But yeah, there may be bigger fish in the market for him, and the fee might be a little bit big after relegation. I don't know, but he'd be top of my list for the midfielders.
You talked about it before, AJ. Josh Brownhill, free agent now as well, I believe. He's out of contract at Burnley.
Yeah, I mean, that would be brilliant with the experience that he has with what he offers, a goal-scoring record, versatility, being able to play almost as a bit of a second striker, but also then playing a deeper role and score goals. Real pedigree. And, I mean, a midfield with him and Morsey or signing someone else in there would be quite something for sure. I think a little bit ambitious, having seen West Ham links. And I'd imagine that there will be some other top sides sniffing. I think Rangers, Celtic, or one of the old firm clubs was linked with him as well. It would be an excellent addition, but one that I think is potentially out of town's reach, given also where his current club are as well in the Premier League and being able to offer that. But if that's the profile of player that Town will look to attract in the Championship, then that's exciting as well. And as I said, they're not going to need to go out and say, here's our budget of, let's say, 30 million to spend this summer. We need to go sign 8, 9, 10 players. And then all of a sudden, you're thinking about cutting costs and maybe this player can move on, things like that. No, you're able to put some serious money towards a couple, 2, 3 good players, and that will actually upgrade the starting lineup from where it was maybe at the end of last season.
Here's the balancing act, right? This summer, and we're talking about the time frame of things. We want Ipswich to be really ambitious and set their targets high, because we're talking about wanting to sign players that not only can hopefully get Ipswich promoted, but could then travel with them to the to the Premier League. By setting your sights high, the risk is that you spend all summer chasing them, you fall short in them, and then you're left with a late scramble, and then your options B, C and D may have gone, and that ship has sailed, and it's a bit of a late scramble, and no one wants that. But what's the alternative is that you kind of go for sort of mid-tier targets straight off the bat just to get them in the door, and then you're not quite sure if they're going to carry you in the medium to long term. So that's probably the balancing act that Ipswich face at the moment. People like Brownhill, Hackney, they will be the absolute top tier targets, but I guess that Ipswich will have to have a point where they kind of sense that maybe things like that may or may not be possible, and I'm just throwing out names that are out there at the moment, and move on elsewhere. But I'll tell you someone else. You know, I did a piece on sort of former targets and whether they might still be viable. There's a couple of other names that I forgot about, and I was punching in some of these numbers into the data and stuff and seeing who was coming up. Jason Knight, who Ipswich had a look at when he left Derby for Bristol City in the summer of 2023, which would have been in preparation for the Championship promotion season. And he went to Bristol City instead. And he comes out quite nicely in terms of sort of aerials, dribbles, passing stats for a Bristol City side that finished in sixth in the end, didn't they, last season, getting into the playoffs. He signed a 4-year deal, so we'll be halfway through that. He jumped off the page. And do you remember Stephen Alzate, who was on trial for Ipswich after he got released by Brighton? He comes out quite nicely in the stats for Hull last season. He signed for Hull as a free agent in the end. Versatile, he can sort of play on the left, but I think he ended up playing central midfield quite a bit for them. So there are plenty of options there. It's just how long Ipswich spend on chasing the very, very big targets before they move on.
Are we missing one of the former targets that I thought you were going to mention there? I think is a Mark Heath favourite, a midfielder who might be suffering relegation from Ligue 1 in France to Ligue 2 in controversial fashion. Everyone's favourite midfielder from the States, Tanner Tessman.
Tanner Tessman, man.
Yeah, he was linked, I think, kind of, I'd imagine it was from a fairly, I can't remember, I think it was a fairly reliable source. So it's probably someone that Town had on a list of potential midfielders there, and he ticked all the boxes kind of physically. But he's at Lyon, isn't he? And they are going through a little bit of a crisis at the moment. Been playing fairly regularly for them, 25 games, only 13 starts last season. But they might be relegated due to their financial mismanagement stuff. So if they are, maybe he'll be on the move. Maybe he does fancy Portman Road after all.
Who doesn't? Friends, we've managed to fill almost 65 minutes with largely speculation. I hope you've enjoyed our chat. We threw a few names around at the end there as well. AJ's piece, very much worth reading. If you want to see all four players at each time for Ipswich Town, go and see that. You need to be a subscriber, though, which brings me on to my next point. So we are at the starting point, pretty much now, of pre-season. We've got the fixtures. We've got the kits coming out on Saturday. We know that. Before we know it, they'll be in Austria. And after that, obviously, they've got Aberdeen. They've got Charlton at Colchester. They've got Auxerre in France. And we'll be there for all of those, friends. And to mark this very exciting season, hopefully, coming up, we've launched our biggest offer on digital subscriptions of the year. So as I just said there, £6 for 6 months gets you everything for that period, which would include the boys flying out to Austria, three-man team in Austria, Stewie, AJ, Ross in Austria, then Stew's in Aberdeen with Rossi flying back like the jet setter that he is to cover the game at Colchester. And then file this under the nothing can go wrong file. Rossi and Alex are going to France on their own, where I'd imagine that AJ is going to have to fill the role of dad in that scenario, despite the fact you're about 5-6 years younger than Ross. So hopefully you'll be there for that, and we'll be bringing everyone behind the scenes stuff from there as well. So £6 6 months gets you all of that. Obviously then gets you all the signings, the profiles, the Stu looks like he wants to say something.
No, I'm just thinking, how to word this, because we might have some younger ears listening. But the last time I didn't accompany Ross and Alex on a pre-season tour, Ross ended up having a sex aid strapped to his forehead on a train. And that's the sort of behind-the-scenes video content
you can only get as a subscriber. Yeah, absolutely.
I will be sharing that.
Six of your English pounds.
Yeah, I will be sharing that on Twitter again this afternoon to plug the deal. The screenshot, the still image of that eventful train journey, and there is the full video. You can still go and watch it now if you really want to. It's still up there. Go have a look at Ross and
that. Yeah, who knows what will befall the young guns in France on their own this time. So £6 for 6 months anyway gets you all of that, all of the pre-season stuff, all of the signings when they start making them, profiles of the signings, scouting reports on the signings AJ is going to do, and then obviously we take you into the season, the big kickoff that takes you deep into the season, friends. But even better, we've got 50% off for the whole year. So that's £29 for the whole year. What's that, like £2.50 a month? Less than that to cover the entire year. So the whole championship season, all the promotion celebrations afterwards, fingers crossed. It will take you all the way through into that, into next summer. So that deal is live now. We've got links all over social media. Just click on one of those, sign up. We'd love to have you on board. We've spoken before about why this is important to us. Print journalism like this, advertising like this, but online journalism going like this. But fortunately, there's not a lot of money attached to that. So we need to find a way, friends. I do like getting paid for what I do. We need to find a way of making money, a new way of making money. And that, in this scenario, is people paying. Hopefully, you'd agree, not too much money. I mean, £6 for 6 months, that's the price of a pint, pretty much, or less than where I drink anyway. £7.10 I paid for a pint the other day. That's an aside. But hopefully you'd agree that's good value. And if you do feel able to support us, I know a lot of you already have, it does mean a lot to us. It is very important to us and the model of journalism for us going forward. That offer is live now. Please consider signing up if you haven't already. Just means that we can carry on covering Ipswich Town to the extent that we do. We all love what we do. We're passionate about it, as I'm sure you can tell from listening to this podcast for a while. So it's important, isn't it, Stu? People should sign up, right?
Yes, please. Yeah, we'll do get Alex's player ratings. If you don't subscribe, you don't get to call Alex names every week for which, giving someone a six instead
of
a seven.
That's a big perk, yeah.
So that's a perk. What else do we do? My verdicts that I stay up and write after every game. So you'll get nearly 50 of those probably over the course of a championship season, throwing some cup games as well. We'll hopefully sort of deliver you plenty of player exclusives along the way. What's a good example of that? Calvin Phillips last year. We did a two-part interview with him that you had to be a subscriber. We might chuck in a few prizes along the way as well. We've given away some signed shirts, some club shop vouchers for people who are subscribers. Might do some special live podcast access type things along the way. So we'll try and give you lots of perks. for, as you say, hopefully not in this day and age, £6 doesn't get you very far. £29 doesn't get you very far for a whole year's worth of all of that. Come on, you know it makes sense.
Absolutely. And funny you should mention shirt giveaways there, Stu, because I think, I'm not giving too much away, but I think that might be coming down the line with a new kit for subscribers. And you have to be a subscriber to enter competitions like that. AJ, anything you want to say about the importance of people signing up to follow what we do?
Yeah, everything you guys have said. I mean, this should, in theory, be a really exciting season. We know that last year was probably a bit of a hard sell for us trying to create content for a
it
season
was.
That yeah. didn't go to plan.
The number
it
show
was,
it was
hard. Yes, it was difficult, and a lot of you didn't care, and that's all right. We understand that, but now there is a reason to care because the fixtures are out, the kit's on the way, signings will be coming. We're going to Austria. You can follow us in Austria. We're going to Scotland. Or Stu's going to Scotland. You can follow him in Scotland. We're going to go to France. Hopefully, we'll make it back, and you can follow us there and back if we manage to do that. There's going to be so much coming. That's already before the start of the season. The £6 for 6 month deal will carry you to the January transfer window, won't it? Around that kind of time, that will give you the first half of the season, and it should really be a good one. We're going to try and give you a lot of good exclusive content. We believe we've been doing that consistently for a while now, but there's plenty more to come.
There's always a reason to care, AJ. It's always a reason to care. Through rain or shine, we've been there, haven't we, for decades as a newspaper, some of us for decades as journalists, and we'll be there again. We go again. It's the soap opera that we live our lives to.
Yeah.
It matters because it doesn't matter, and it's our pleasure sort of chronicling it for you and being your friends along the way, hopefully. So stick with us, please.
Yeah, as I wrote in the offer story, obviously now the world's media doesn't care. They're not in the Premier League, not interested.
Exactly.
But we'll still be there because we've always been there and we always bloody will be there. So sign up and follow Tan with us if you can. It's great to have you on board. Anything else to mention, friends, before we take our leave? You got any other points to mention? When are you off to see Ed Sheeran?
I am. Off
That's
to see
a
Ed Sheeran.
Week
yeah.
on Saturday, isn't it? Or Friday, Saturday,
yeah.
Sunday, whatever.
Quite a busy period, this, isn't it? We've got that. So that's on the Sunday. We're at the Sunday one standing. So if you see me, come and say hi. If you recognise who I am, you never know. And then from that, we go to Austria the week after that.
Yeah.
Don't we? We've got a little bit of time out there. So we should be able to record some good content. If anyone has suggestions of how to fill like 10 hours before flying back, like after check out to flying back on the Sunday, then let us know. We will go and do some tourism in Linz. I'm off for a bit and then we come back and go to France, and I'm terrified of going to France. We'll see what happens. My French isn't that good anymore. We're staying in the hotel opposite somewhere called Le Pub, which
sounds good.
It's great. I love it. That sounds great. And I really hope that Ross and I can go and visit Le Pub and maybe do our post-match podcasts with a pint at Le Pub. That sounds great. And then we get on to the big season start. Busy few weeks.
Zouta law, you're going to be jet-setting off all over the place. I'm really jealous of you. What I would say, AJ, to alleviate your fear of travelling to France is just a reminder that Ross will be absolutely useless. It'll be entirely falling on you. So good luck with that. Stu, we have, of course, I just remembered, since we last spoke, we've had the big one, the sports day.
Oh, yeah.
How did we get on?
I finished third, which I'm quite happy with, to be honest. I think I told you my trend had been third, fourth, fifth. So I reversed the trend. I'm moving back in the right
defying
direction.
Age. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
questions over the winners, potential drug cheats, I'd imagine.
Probably. Yeah.
For legal reasons, that's a joke.
Yeah. if any of the dads are listening, that isn't an accusation. Please don't sue me.
And we've not named them anyway. So scot free.
Exactly. No. The main thing is it was shorter this year. It was a full on 100 meters in previous years, which was a bit much. I think we all agreed. And this year they changed it to like a 50 meter dash sort of thing, which suited us all down to the ground a little bit more. But the main thing is I turned to my wife on the sidelines afterwards and she just gave me a little, one of those little nods.
Oh, nice.
And that was more approval. Like, yeah, a little nod of approval. And it wasn't where I finished. I think it was more the aesthetics of my running. She was a little bit embarrassed by my sort of chest out, weird running style, which I think you showed in the picture before. So it was more the fact that it's a balancing act between wanting to do well but not trying too hard.
Yeah.
And I think I just about trod that line.
You've been working on your cadence, have you? The drive phase and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
No.
Spent the whole evening watching Usain Bolt videos the night before.
Yeah. Look how he starts. I mean, to be fair, Bolt, the start was the worst part of his race. Friends, that brings us to the end of today's podcast. We've done an hour and 15 minutes, which is remarkable, given we've really not had a lot to talk about. So just a reminder, before we go, this is important because I keep getting this wrong, and it's frankly an insult. Support our sponsor, Stardust Spirits. Use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk. And I keep mentioning this award-winning product of theirs, and I always fudge what it actually is. So I've made sure I've got it to hand. It's the Biscoff Biscuit Vodka. Has won numerous awards in the World Drinks Awards. And AJ, that's the one you enjoy. So you can 100% say that's bloody good stuff. So go and get yourself a bottle of that. They do little samplers as well. I'd recommend the Cascade Rum and also the Single Malt. Go and get that. 20% off with the KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk. Right then, friends, we're heading into a weekend where we're going to finally learn what Town's kits look like for the coming season. It's the next step towards their inevitable domination of the championship. Give us a follow across social media, Kings of Anglia on YouTube, Instagram, X, Facebook, TikTok. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because we've not had one of those, I think, since February, which is quite frankly a disgrace. And it's not good for our egos not to have reviews telling us how great we are. So go and drop a 5-star review on iTunes. Just helps us lift us visibility wise in the charts. And friends, we'll be back next week when we'll know what the kit looks like. It's going to be blue, we reckon, with a bit of white and potentially purple away. That's AJ's big tip. Have a great weekend, friends. And we'll speak to you next time.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.